Welcome to a new episode of BFRR, our Bitcoin, Fiat, and Rock'n'Roll podcast that explores the intersection of traditional finance, digital assets, and digital money, and helps you understand how digital assets and money will evolve in the future. I'm co-host Jonas Groß, and today I'm joined by our co-host Michael Blaschke. Hi, Michael.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Sonja. Great to have you.
Nice to have you with us here. So today we have something special for all the listeners. We all know that artificial intelligence or AI is currently transforming various industries, and this may or may not, we will see, also hold for the payment space as we know it. There is a lot of fantasy around agentic commerce, so basically commerce experiences where not humans shop but agents on our behalf. There is also a lot of fantasy and noise around agentic payments, where basically agents will pay on our behalf in the future. But as for every innovation, there is a lot of substance to the topic, a lot of potential, interesting visions, how this changes the world, etc. But obviously, there is also a lot of hype and BS around that. So what we now want to do in this podcast is regularly hosting episodes with industry leaders on the topic of AI, in particular, agentic payments. So as you are used to it from the podcast, no hype, no BS, just facts. That's basically what we want to offer you and do a lot of deep dive sessions into agentic payments. So want to explore what agentic payments promise, what they can really deliver, what it means for payments in general, and also how agentic payments will change the payment space as we know it. And today is the first of many episodes now around agentic payments, where we will discuss basically the fundamentals or the basics. And for this, I'm super excited to have a guest we had in the podcast before, Sonja Davidovic, back in our podcast. So welcome back, Sonja. It's super great to have you back.
Thank you so much, Jonas and Micha. Thank you for inviting me. And it's a pleasure to be back on this podcast. I really like your podcast because it's a bit different. It's a bit more casual, a bit more interactive. So it's always a pleasure to interact with you guys. Thank you for having me.
That's always the goal, and really glad you accepted the invite. And Sonja, it's pretty crazy. The last time you were here, it was March 2021, if I'm not mistaken. So episode 73. So now we have more than 400. So yeah, this was really quite a while
back. It was in German, though, I remember, and I was struggling a little bit because all the expressions that we normally use in the industry are a bit harder to say in German, just because we're so used to using English in our daily lives.
Oh, yes.
But it was back fun.
It really was. And I think we talked in particular about CBDCs, and Michael, who used to remember the German, good old German podcast days. So now almost like more than 1.5 years in English, right?
Definitely easier, yeah.
For sure. And I mean, for everybody who doesn't know you, Sonja, you know, really suggest listen to the episode we recorded, episode 73, where we do an introduction about you, you know, as a person, what you have been working on back that. So we will kind of skip this part and make this a little bit shorter today. So in a nutshell, Sonja, from my perspective, seems to always be at the forefront of innovation, if you will. So worked at the Bank for International Settlements, also from the Innovation Hub in Singapore, was before at the International Monetary Fund, also at the European Central Bank, working on the digital euro, and now back at the International Monetary Fund, IMF, also looking into agentic payments. So what I would be very curious, Sonja, is you know, researched a lot of topics like crypto, CBDC very early. I remember some early papers together with John Kiff. You looked into decentralized finance. So as said, always at the forefront of innovation. What now sparked your interest about AI? So why did you, you know, decide to go into the agentic payments and, you know, not look, I don't know, more into DeFi or CBDC, but more look onto the agentic side of things?
Thanks for taking me back or taking me on this trip down memory lane. That's really fun. Yeah, I remember our first CBDC papers were when nobody really talked about CBDC. But yeah, I think a recurring theme in my career has always been exploring how technology changes the way it interacts with financial infrastructure. We have to think about how will technology impact our membership, how it will impact the economy at large. So agentic AI is one of those technologies that is transformative in its nature and the way and the impact it will have on payment systems, on financial infrastructure, and people in general. So it kind of sparked our interest because we were thinking, we have agentic AI, and it's been around for a while now, but then we have the whole world of payments and digital assets. So we started seeing or observing how these two worlds are increasingly colliding. So in our mind, it was clear that we have to explore some more how to reconcile the two worlds that are seemingly different from the looks of it. So what is interesting about agentic AI is that it introduces a new participant into the ecosystem. So all of a sudden, we have software that can interpret objectives and make decisions and initiate actions on behalf of users. That's really, really novel. And not just like on its own, but then again, how do these features mesh with a world of payment and digital assets? So previously, we have seen that AI mainly supported decision making, but now we're seeing agents actually stepping in and participating actively in the payment process itself. And that really changes the ballgame entirely, because it raises questions around trust, accountability, authorization, settlement, all these really important things that are highly relevant for central banks and payment operators and then policymakers in general, I would say. So to get a better kind of understanding a vision of how this world will evolve, we had to get started on exploring how agentic AI works for payments. And the paper, I would say, is just scratching the surface of what we need to work on still. There's still a lot of work ahead of us in terms of exploring in depth some of these topics that we will talk about today and that the paper touches upon.
Yeah, and it's kind of still early, right? So if you think about that, like the ChatGPT moment was already, I think, 4 years ago. But still, and everybody's talking about agentic and agentic payments and a prototype here and there, but it still feels very, very early. And what I really appreciate about the paper, and it's titled How Agentic AI Will Reshape Payments, of course, we will link this in the show notes, is that you really, you know, brought a lot more structure to this whole debate, right? Because as I remember, actually, Sonia, I think it's a little bit similar with the CBDC discussions, you know, when you were writing the papers before the people talked about it, that, you know, it was just lagging a joint terminology and everything. So this is something that I really appreciate about the paper, and also why we really wanted to do this episode on this paper together with you to dive a little bit deeper here.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think you're absolutely right. This is still very early days, and we have to all make an effort collectively, and this includes you guys as well, as you're doing research yourself, to get to the bottom of these. I would say there's still a lot of challenges and still a lot of analysis that is needed to understand better how agentic AI and payments will work, and what an impact it will have on the economy.
And let's maybe start, Sonia, just first thing on, you know, with a definition, because as an economist, I always love to, you know, start with a definition. Like, how would you define agentic AI? What does it mean for you? Or maybe also, what does it not mean?
All right. I think it's good to start with the definition first, because clarity is absolutely vital. Agentic AI to me is an AI systems that can autonomously act on behalf of users. So rather than merely providing recommendations, which we've had up till now, these systems can interpret objectives and break them into distinct tasks. And from there, they then independently and autonomously interact with digital services and pursue specific goals with limited human intervention. I want to say limited because as we have noted in the paper and as we will discuss today, I do think that there's still a human element needed, especially for high-value transactions. But in the payments context, I would say agentic AI could move us from a world where humans explicitly initiate every transaction to one where AI agents increasingly mediate decisions, and they also execute those decisions within predefined mandates. Now, what these mandates are, they're going to be different based on the entity, the individual who stands behind the agent, and the intent of that specific transaction or purchase, whatever the case may be. So that's kind of in a nutshell how I think about agentic AI.
Sonia, if you allow, so just to make sure that both I and the audience totally get it when it comes to agentic AI, what I'm understanding is that the shift isn't AI in payments in general. I would assume that's about 40 years old. What I understand from your paper and what you just said is that it's actually AI initiating payments under delegated authority at machine speed. So an AI agent gets a budget per month, so let's say $200 per month to be paid on whatever the prompt requests the agent to buy and pay for. Is that understanding correct? So the shift from click to pay to decide to pay, which is the shift you're describing in the paper. Is that the precise understanding we should now adopt in the recording here?
That's absolutely correct and captures the main point or the main sort of shift, because we're moving away from the world, as I was saying, that of an agent or an AI system recommending something and being there as an assistant, as an advisor, to a situation where the agent can manage the entire payment or the entire purchase cycle. So now not only can it initiate a purchase, let's say, but it can also all the way to, let's say, dispute resolution, an agent bought the wrong thing or it wasn't within the budget, like it can help resolve that issue with whoever is the seller online. So this is definitely a big paradigm shift, because we have we can enable an agent to have, or vest an agent with full autonomy to act on our behalf and dictate how the agent's behavior will perform on our behalf. And so that we have not had up till now. It was more in the confines of like, oh, it looks like you're looking for a specific product or you want to make a specific payment. We recommend such and such. And then the human is still the one deciding whether to act upon it or not. In this case, the agent, basically, you give him autonomy to when these specific criteria are met or within the mandate that you provide the agent, it can then autonomously act on your behalf and like manage the entire purchase from start to finish, if it's an e-commerce use case, for instance.
Yeah, excellent. It was really important for me before we now move on into the next section, which is then on the impact of agentic AI on payments. So really the reward impact, it was super important for me that we now keep in the back of our all minds that this is really, that we are now really talking about a world in which AI initiates payments under delegated authority from the human, from the prompter, at machine speed, which is a different world, a different paradigm for payments. And now really moving on to the impact of this concept on payments as we know it today. I found interesting that in your paper you just introduced, you argue that payments are undergoing this fundamental transition we just talked about. So from being initiated through explicit human instructions to increasingly being initiated by AI agents acting behalf of users, and you introduce an AI payment layered model to structure the discussion. So you distinguish between first intent formation orchestration, then second authentication control, and third settlement. Could you maybe elaborate on this model? Why did you find it useful to structure this future world we are talking about in this way? So why three layers? Why not four or five? Can you maybe elaborate on the model and why you find this way of thinking about this future of payments so useful?
That's a good question. I think that I cannot answer why three and not four layers, because there's also a secret sauce behind our thinking on this. But I really don't think it is about the number of layers, but I think it's more about the functions that these layers represent. And this three-layer model that we have developed is sort of the guiding framework for how we should think about agentic AI and payments. And it's kind of the centerpiece of this paper, I would argue. It's not just an organizing framework or an architectural concept. It's also a very important risk mitigant. And I explain shortly why that is the case. First, I mentioned the collision between the probabilistic world of agentic AI and the extremely deterministic world of payment systems or, you know, settlement assets. So one way, and we have to be very creative how we can reconcile these two worlds, because we want them to coexist. We want to bridge these gaps and find a way to bring these two worlds together. Although, as I said, they're seemingly completely different because, as I explained earlier, the probabilistic reasoning is highly difficult to confine within, you know, a deterministic outcome. So it's like you need to get to a logic for settlement where the instruction produces the same outcome over and over and again, and responsibilities are clearly allocated and transactions are auditable and legally final. That's absolutely vital for settlement. But then AI kind of brings in this wild card because it introduces probabilistic reasoning and this highly adaptive decision making, as we all know from the AI that we're using in our daily life. So it was a matter for us reconciling these fundamentally different design logics. And this is where the three-layer framework was born. Because for us, we quickly understood that we have to separate the functions. And again, whether that happens in three layers or four layers or 10, like that's really up to, you know, the creativity of the author or like the designer of this framework. But for us, we saw that in layer one, we clearly need to separate the intent and orchestration of the AI. In this intent and orchestration layer, we're kind of leaving the AI to interpret user goals, gather all the required information, evaluate different options, and then propose actions based on those, based on that due diligence, so to speak. So this layer AI is responsible for reasoning and orchestration. And this is, if you will, where you kind of leave it to the agents to do work their magic. In layer two, however, we introduce these deterministic controls. So here's where we add more rigidity into the mix. So when it comes to authentication, control, and authorization, it's important that in this layer to verify that an agent is authorized to act, check whether a payment falls within a predefined mandate or a budget that a user has or liquidity needs that an entity has, whatever the case may be, and whether any relevant compliance requirements are satisfied. That's particularly important for the world of payments, where there are a number of different compliance requirements. So the key purpose for layer two was to place these enforceable guardrails around agent behavior. So think of it as like in layer one, the agents are kind of at their liberty to gather all the input that they need.
They reason, plan, compare, negotiate, exactly, whatever they need to do, right?
Yes. And then in layer two, they get into this state where there's some guardrails that have to be enforced before around this agent behavior. So here it becomes into, okay, we're confining you to a specific parameter or mandate or budget, whatever the case may be. And then finally in layer three, I would say if you were to think about it in terms of like a pyramid, like at the settlement layer, there's very little room for any kind of probabilistic behavior, as I was saying earlier. Like the settlement layer really has to remain unchanged. So once an instruction passes the authorization layer, these existing payment rails or settlement infrastructures will execute the transaction with finality and really determinism. So there's a clear-cut outcome. Whatever has been authorized for a payment or for a purchase, whatever the use case is, then gets settled with an absolutely clear outcome. And I think that if you structure the thinking in this way, you're able to bridge these two worlds because you're separating functions. You're separating functions along those layers, and you allow those two worlds to bring out the best, really the best of the possible outcomes in this kind of framework, right? So we're allowing this creative outlet for the agents within the intent layer, if you want to call it creative, but That's, you know, one way to think about it. And then we're adding more controls and guardrails as the payment or the purchase progresses, with the ultimate goal at settlement, whatever comes at the end, is absolutely crystal clear. There cannot be any doubt about whether a settlement is final or not. And that is why that settlement layer will always have to be completely separate from the rest. Because for any participant that is privy to that transaction, that participates in that transaction, there has to be a clear-cut outcome, clear-cut kind of end result.
And if we now try, Sonia, to make this a little bit, you know, practical, let's say with an example, and also let me check if I understood what you were explaining. So let me, for example, imagine now I'm with my, you know, the AI of my daily life. So whatever this is, Claude, Gemini, ChatGPT or something, I'm in this future world that you're describing. I'm in there and say, hey, I want a nice looking T-shirt in my size to buy, for example. Then in the first step, the AI agent would basically check, okay, did I understand what the person wants? Do I have all the information, you know, orchestration also going into, you know, checking different marketplaces, et cetera. Is this what the first step is about? Did I get this correct?
Yeah. So if you were to take a classic e-commerce use case, which I think might be a good one to showcase how these three layers would work. So in the intent layer, it's then where the user slash you, in this case, clearly communicates, I want to buy a T-shirt for, $50 from that brand. I have this much. I can spend between $50 and $100, let's say. I want the color to be this. Whatever your parameters are, your preferences, user preferences. So you feed that intent to the agent. And then the intent layer, AI understands, the agent tries to interpret your goals. It will gather all the information. So we'll go out there and look for all the possible T-shirts that might fit that bill that you have or that intent that you have expressed, your preferences that you have expressed. And then it will evaluate all the options. Oh, it looks like this T-shirt is falls within your budget, but the colors might be too bright, or, you know, it will gather all the intelligence it can on that specific T-shirt and try to give you the closest match based on your preferences. And then it will propose action. So it will be responsible in that layer. It will reason or orchestrate, but not execute yet. And so then, you know, it all depends on how you set this up as well, right? Somebody might prefer to still take a look at the options that the AI picked out, but then some users will say no, if, you know, all my criteria are met, then in the second layer, in the authentication control and authorization layer, there will be another check against, have all the parameters that Jonas has had been met? Meaning, does it fit the budget? Is it within the price range you determined? Is it the color you like? Is it the brand that you normally buy? Is it a different one? What is the shipping cost? What is the shipping time? All of these are basically checks against your list of the criteria that you have defined, that you have provided to the agent. And then it will also make sure that the agent doesn't all of a sudden buy something that is completely different from what you've expressed. Let's say a purple dress instead of a yellow T-shirt, right? So then it passes that layer two, where it says yes, all checks have been, or all parameters have been met. It's within budget, color, brand, everything fits. And then in the third layer, it will grab your credit card information or whatever it is, your payment instrument, or however you're paying for this purchase, and it will actually execute and buy this T-shirt for you in layer three. It will settle the purchase with using your credit card information as you have fed it previously. And then all you have to do is lean back and wait for your T-shirt to arrive. So that's basically how it works.
Well, and for me, this is a great use case, Sonia. I really hate shopping, in particular for some clothes stuff. So I would,
agent
does this trustworthily and is not hallucinating, I would be one of the first. But I think it was very important what you mentioned, Sonia, in the end on the settlement, that of course, and this is something we will also, you know, go a lot deeper into future episodes on this, what this means of payment will be, right? This can be the credit card, a stable coin, maybe a CBDC at some point, a tokenized deposit, you know, a bank account, whatever, right? And then that's something, again, which we maybe we also have time later in this episode or in future episodes we will discuss, because obviously different forms of money are differently well or badly suited for settlement of specific amount of payments that are, you know, initiated and driven by agents.
You know what's really cool about that? So I'm with you. I really do not like shopping. I know it's unusual for a woman to say that, but I absolutely dislike shopping because it's just time consuming, and the lines and the, you know, it's just like the bright lights and like the odor and the, anyways, I just dislike it. And so then you would naturally go to online shopping, but then I also have the problem with like, oh, then the size, it doesn't fit, or the color and whatever. Like, I don't like dealing with that either. So I'm in this conundrum. But what is beautiful about this agentic AI and e-commerce, for instance, is that it can handle the dispute resolution, let's say. So it can help me also return all the items that don't, you know, if whatever, that t-shirt didn't fit that well, you just don't like the color or whatever the case may be. It will help you with, like, I mean, of course, you still have to walk the package back or the parcel back to wherever it needs to be dropped off, but it will help you with, like, you know, handling all the returns or any kind of dispute resolution. Let's say you were charged a lot more than you had intended to pay. It can handle that part as well. It really can go as far as to manage the whole conversation with the seller around returning that item, or, you know, whatever the case issue is that you have with that specific item.
So, Sonia, next to describing this core tension so well, that is, agentic AI is probabilistic and adaptive, and payment rails are deterministic and require legal finality and auditability and clear accountability. So I think describing this core tension in itself is already a precious contribution, because not everyone thinking about agentic AI has it that clearly in mind. But then next to describing this core tension, you as a solution proposed a three-layer model in which you keep the probabilistic stuff upstream in the model and keep authorization layer 2 and settlement layer 3 really rule bound. So beyond this, let's say, conceptual contribution, did you also come across use cases in payments, and there are many, that lend themselves particularly well for agentic AI? So on the roadmap of these many payments use cases, which are the first in which we will see agents pay? You mentioned dispute resolution, you mentioned e-commerce. So what are your top three, if you will, where we will see agents act first?
Oh, top three. Okay. So you talked at length about e-commerce. I think that one's like front, left, and center. That was like the number one use case. And we already see a number of agentic AI protocols that are being developed at a rapid and rampant speed. Like, there's like new ones being churned out as we speak. So that's definitely an area, a use case that will see the highest adoption, if I may give that kind of prediction. I do see a lot of potential as well for compliance and reporting automation. We write about that in the paper. So there is definitely a way for agents to identify anomalies, suspicious transactions, and like then, instead of suggesting actions, actually executing them and saying, okay, this looks like a suspicious transaction or something funky. Let's, you know, activate process such and such that will help the supervisors, the overseers of that like payment system, for instance, to, you know, get more efficiency, because obviously it's busy. It's a busy type of work to monitor and oversee, you know, print transactions on a daily basis. So agentic AI can really, really help. And like, if managed properly, obviously there's risks and gaps with everything. But if managed properly, this can be a very powerful tool for oversight and supervision.
And did you structure the use cases like around consumer and then, you know, point of sale and then, I don't know, the transaction bank? So did you already cluster use cases in the paper?
Yes. Yes, we did. We did. I mean, for us, like, it was less about seeing exactly who will be the participants. And like for the e-commerce use case, for instance, we didn't really, you know, identify specifically who the participants are, whether it's like an individual, an entity or such, but like we're explaining it in like in such terms where it's for most part, it's like, you know, you can think about an individual purchasing something, but it can very well apply to machine-to-machine payment or business-to-business payments, really. You know, that I think was like something that we didn't want to get too bogged down on, but we rather wanted to keep it a bit more general and to explain what the impact is for e-commerce in general without identifying whether it's like individual to merchant or merchant to merchant, because ultimately that will be depend on like what you know, what how you want to draw a scope around like your use case. This works regardless of who the participant is in a specific for a specific payment or purchase. And I guess because you asked me for your top three, but I only gave you two.
Then go for number three.
I'm paying attention here. Okay. No, but I think the third one in my mind, and this is where I do think we need to spend a lot more time on robust analysis, is the treasury and liquidity optimization. So helping entities with like optimizing liquidity management. So this is really interesting because, you know, right now, like especially in the context of foreign exchange liquidity, because, you know, foreign exchange, and we see that in the paper, foreign exchange markets are kind of very disparate. There's many venues where FX is traded. And, you know, it's, yes, these are automated still, but like not to the point where you're actually executing transactions, right? It's more like, you know, you still have the option or the choice, but you can here automate routine financial decisions, then liquidity allocation would become more optimized. And I think this is something where, especially in the cross-border payments context, this could be really powerful. Now, mind you, of course, you know that it comes with warnings and like flags and all sorts of things. So, and this is why, because there's challenges around it, you know, we have to give it a lot more attention. We have to spend some quality research on finding out ways of how we can make sure that these like gaps and challenges that exist at the moment do not bring a potentially very powerful use case down, or like they just block it because we haven't spent enough time thinking about it. So I think it takes, again, a collective effort to think through how we can resolve some of these challenges so we can harness the biggest potential for this technology and liquidity management specifically.
Okay, so this was now three when I counted correctly, Sonia.
Yes.
So thanks for also sharing the third one. What was very, very interesting for me is always when I think about, you know, agents in like agentic payments or AI in payments, I always think about the payments itself. So the e-commerce payment and everything. But what you said is basically that it can be way more. So it can be help you to, you know, do compliance reporting automation, do even the dispute resolution, which we know it sucks, right? You ordered something, they send you the wrong, I don't know, the wrong t-shirt, or the package didn't really survive, let's say, right? So I think that's super good, because my use case view was always too narrow. But obviously this also means this requires probably even more time to flourish, because if I think about the agent would take over my dispute process, it would have to have, you know, access, whatever, to my email inbox, you know, to write emails to some of the suppliers, or to search, you know, to communicate with them on my behalf. So it's probably, you know, a little bit more effort than just initiating a payment on behalf of a human, isn't it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You're basically authorizing your agent to use your credit card information, your email, your personal information. I mean, I know that like specifically in the EU, where, and in Germany in particular, where privacy is a big concern, this is something that we genuinely have to spend more time thinking about as well. Do we really want to give that level of access to an agent? What if the agent goes rogue? Like, how do you reel the agent back in? How do you limit access to, you know, third parties or to unauthorized individuals or entities to that kind of information? So it's not as easy as just saying like, oh, it's super convenient. Like, I'll get my t-shirt and it will be great. Everything will be awesome. We do need to spend a lot more work on thinking about these challenges, including cybersecurity and data privacy, right? Because we don't have proper guardrails in place just yet on how to ensure that this agent doesn't or to preempt cyber attacks, let's say unauthorized access to our personal information, our credit cards. How do we build a proper accountability framework and governance around it so that we limit and robust cybersecurity frameworks so that we limit access to unauthorized third parties to our vital information? So yes, it is still one of those question marks that we need to spend considerable time and energy on if we want to get this right.
Yeah, Sonia, let's do so right now and really double click on these challenges. So you outlined cybersecurity, data privacy already. But then, for example, also there is this already outlined tension between, on the one hand, probabilistic adaptive decision making by the one or multiple agents, and then on the other hand, the deterministic requirements of payment infrastructures, which is the very reason why you introduced your three-layer model. That in itself could be a challenge overcoming those or bridging these two worlds. What are the key challenges for making agentic AI happen and to have its impact materialize?
Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned one just now. So this tension between probabilistic AI decision making and the very deterministic nature of payment systems. So that's one that is at the core of what we're trying to conceptualize here. You know, the three-layer framework is just one way how to think about it. I'm sure, and I'm a big believer in human ingenuity and progress, that we will make more headway. And I've seen, actually, since we published this paper, some of the industry participants have gotten in touch to talk about developments. And we are seeing a lot more effort on solving for some of the layer two, authorization layer, you know, solutions that specifically speak to that layer, because that's going to be one of the critical pieces to figure out. Like, how do you build these guardrails properly so the agent doesn't go rogue, but is also not too constrained? So to balance this, like, need for allowing it to do what it's intended to do, but like within the confines that you determine. So layer two is really vital in that regard. But I've seen that industry has been already like thinking about some solutions around it. The second one we talked about was the cybersecurity risks. So we will see a higher surface attack, if you will, because we could all of a sudden have unauthorized or malicious actors targeting agents directly, or manipulate their decision processes, obtaining payment credentials, personal information. That's all something that, we have to think about harder. And I don't want to say that we will have a solution right away. And this is where more work is needed to figure out how do we build a cybersecurity framework that limits the access of malicious actors to target agents directly. Then the third one I would say is opacity. There are, as we know, and this is nothing new, and it's not just related to payment, but agentic systems may create this opacity. So it will become difficult to understand why a specific decision was taken or how an agent reached a particular outcome. It might be more obvious in the case of the t-shirt we talked about, where it's like, yeah, you want a yellow t-shirt between $50 and $100, whatever the case may be. But it becomes infinitely harder to do so if you have like a complex cross-border transaction where you have multiple intermediaries involved and you're trying to disentangle what went wrong in case something goes wrong. So this is where opacity is problematic, as you're trying to unravel what has happened. It's not like you will have like clarity right away on what has occurred within that probabilistic, especially within layer one, in that probabilistic world. And then finally, I'd say there is a risk around these correlated behavior among many agents. So if you have like agents all of a sudden, like hundreds or thousands of them that are picking up on a market signal when it comes to liquidity, for instance, and then they could really amplify any volatility and create potential systemic risks or unintended market dynamics that is could have disastrous consequences potentially. So how do we build or structure this system in a way that it doesn't disrupt financial stability? So that is something that we have to think about some more. And I think that what also remains largely unresolved are these legal questions. You know, who's liable? Who's accountable? What about authorization when consent with autonomous systems initiate payments? Like, how do you define accountability and liability within this framework? Is it the agent? But then who does the agent belong to? So this is why, you know, in the papers we have suggested some mitigants or ways how to think about these challenges. But that is like an area that also remains largely untapped. We have not figured out how we build a proper accountability framework around it, and how do we define liability in this context.
Yeah, excellent. So you're already listing quite some challenges. What I'm hearing is that authorization will be tricky. That is, the agent must not go rogue, so needs guardrails, but also have agency to take away some of the work and actually receive delegated tasks. Then you mentioned cybersecurity, so agentic AI is even increasing the already high attack surface of payments. Agentic AI is even increasing this attack surface, in that also an agent can now falsely communicate payment details like bank account numbers. So you mentioned opacity. Why did the agent make a buying decision, and this correlation between multiple agents? Now, to be even more specific and already tackle those challenges, which a subset of our audience at least will already be trying to, or will soon be trying to tackle, how about we click a double click on cybersecurity? So, I mean, cybersecurity is a major challenge, still is, of payments, in particular e-commerce. A major part of global payments occurs online. And how can the community or the industry structure and then or keep or reduce this attack surface again with these increasing cybersecurity risks?
Well, that's a billion-dollar question that I think none of us really have a proper answer to. I don't think that there is one foolproof system that will remedy or mitigate the potential cybersecurity risk. So even if we were to design a system based on the three-layer framework, like, there still are potentially vulnerabilities that malicious actors could exploit. So this is just to say that we are always, and whatever we're building, when we're building a system, we have to think about, how do I future-proof it? How do I make sure that, like, in building it, I'm trying to build something that's robust and that is impenetrable to attacks? Of course, everyone would want that, right? But things are evolving. Technology develops. Systems change. So in whatever we're building, we have to have that forward-looking sort of vision that, you know, we're future-proofing. The design leaves enough flexibility so that we can adapt as technology shifts, as technology evolves. Because if I build a secure, resilient, cyber-resilient system now, it might be resilient only for the next year, let's say. And then there's new entrants, new malicious actors, new software that can exploit a vulnerability that was safe and resilient today. So this is my key sort of message to everyone. Like, in whatever you're building, just make sure that there's enough design flexibility inherent in the system so that you allow for changes and upgrades, and you don't build like a monolithic structure, but something that is modular, that is adaptable, that you can change as technology evolves, as software evolves, as things are happening so that you can stand, it stands a test of time, so that you can adapt your system to be resilient against future attacks. And this will require upgrades. There's no doubt about it. We cannot build something that will last and be impenetrable forever without the ability to adapt it, to change it, to insulate it over time. So it has to kind of go with the times. That I would say is the key message. Because, like, again, even the three-layer framework, if we separate the functions out, and, like, again, I keep harping on that point, the three-layer framework is not just the architectural concept, but also a risk mitigant, because you separate functions, so it gets easier to manage any risks or issues that occur. But it's not going to be foolproof. There will be vulnerabilities that can be exploited. So we have to build something that can be upgraded, adapted, changed to new development without kind of throwing away everything, but, like, keeping the core structure and then adjusting it so it it can stand the test of time and evolve with changes in technology and changes in software and, like, protocols, new things that are happening as we speak.
Space is really super dynamic. And before we, ask you our last questions, where we ask you for an outlook, some insights you have and how this looks in 2030, 2035. Maybe one question before that, because for our audience, obviously, they hear us a lot talk about CBDCs, tokenized deposits, wholesale, retail, stablecoins, credit cards, all of that. So obviously, one of the key questions they may have is, what is now the, kind of the means of payment that the agents will use? And we will definitely use this podcast to dive down or dive deeper into the topic, to talk with stablecoin issuers, maybe also with banks, to get a little bit different perspectives there. But you also briefly, touched this in the paper, Sonia, the role that also stablecoins, potential CBDCs could play in this agentic payments realm. Like, what is kind of your initial perspective on this, means of payment that agents could maybe use in the future for our shopping experience and agentic payments of the future?
Well, yeah, I think for e-commerce right now, like, it's mainly a lot of these use credit card information that's on file, probably stored for a lot of the consumers. But frankly, sky's the limit as to what payment instrument can be used. And I don't think we get into the specifics in the paper about this is the one payment instrument you need to use with agentic AI. So we're not prescriptive like that. But frankly, I would say, like, it works with any, could work with any payment instrument, really, so long as it satisfies the mandate and the parameters that you as a user, you as an entity have defined. Frankly, it also depends on the use case. So for instance, and for cross-border payments, high value transactions, maybe there's preferred payment over, small scale, low value purchases on the e-commerce side. So that will also drive, like, the choice of the payment instrument, but that's no different from the decision that we have to make now. So that is very much the answer I would have to that. When it comes to digital assets specifically, we just have to be creative in how we think about mapping these agentic mandates, or the mandates or perimeters that the agents operate under. How do we map them, or is there a way to map them to the smart contracts that are underlying digital assets? So, in terms of technical interoperability, is there something that we can achieve there? Is there a mapping that needs to happen? What is the potential benefit of enabling such mapping? I think that could be something interesting to research. Like, is there a technical interoperability that we can unlock through the smart contracts and underlying digital assets that will work in concert with agentic, the confines that we define in layer 2 of the agentic AI and payment systems. So yeah, that's kind of something fun to explore, I would think.
Yeah, I I know that your IMF note is deliberately not super bullish and balanced on this one, though. I can offer a hot take on this one. I think agents need money that does behave like software and only stablecoins do behave like software, actually. I mean, I have many arguments for that. Probably I share two. My first is stablecoins are programmable by default. So the speed, the spend limits, the conditions and guardrails live in the wallet itself and not in a bank's back office. So the controls really travel with stablecoins as the form of money. And the second argument for why stablecoins particularly lend themselves to agentic payments is that they're always on, always final. So agents operate 24/7 across time zones, but then batch windows, cutoff times and correspondent chains are then really human or human scale constraints. Yeah. So I have a pretty strong opinion that is agents need money that behaves like software and stablecoins do exactly that.
Yeah. I mean, you're entitled to your own opinion. I I will stick by my opinion that it really depends on the use case. So there is many ways to skin a cat. And I think we have to keep an open mind because we cannot just assume that there's only one right solution or one way to go. I think that we will be in a transition period for a while, and so it has to work. And frankly, most of the e-commerce use cases nowadays work with simple credit cards, like the credit card information that you provide, and works well. There's no reason why that shouldn't work. Mind you, if everything is managed properly, like the data privacy is ensured, and you know have no exploits or data breaches. But I do think that there's more ways how to enable agentic AI. Like payment instruments will be very much use case dependent.
All right. I think the question around which means of payment is best suited for agentic AI is potentially right the next question to tackle in an upcoming episode. For now, Sonia, we would really appreciate, now that you spent so much time covering or researching agentic AI, share some thinking about the future, about an outlook. So to trigger your thinking on it, what do you think is the share of payments really globally that will be initiated by AI agents in 2030, so already in about 3.5 years, and then in 2035? So you may want to use intervals instead of just one percentage number to share your prediction.
Crystal ball time.
Exactly. I was just going to say, let me get my crystal ball out and take a look what's going to happen. No, jokes aside, I think it's still too early to make credible numerical forecasts, and I would be, you know, I don't think that it will be right for me to do so. But what seems clear is that the share of agent-mediated payments will grow significantly over time. I don't know by what year exactly and what exact number that will be, but we can expect to see these payments grow in conjunction with the protocols that underlie these payments. And so for the pace of adoption, that's a whole different story, I would say, because it will depend less on AI capabilities themselves and more on how effectively we solve all these open questions and challenges that I've mentioned in our podcast today. So questions around authorization, accountability, governance, and most importantly, trust. You know, can I trust the agent with something as sensitive as my payment information, my credit card information, my personal data? What does it take to build that trust, earn that trust? And certainly that is something that cannot be done overnight. It takes time and it takes a collective effort, as I was saying earlier, to tackle some of these open questions that will hopefully enable that trust so that we can get to a state where we absolutely feel comfortable to share our payment credentials with an agent and unleash the agent to go shopping for us or, you know, carry out whatever payments we have in mind. So I do think that 2030 might be, you know, how should I say, you know, I can't say like how long it takes to build trust, but certainly in the domain of all these open legal questions, it will take a lot more time than just a few years, I would argue.
Okay, totally understandable. We try to nudge and trick you into some bold hot take predictions, but totally understandable that it's almost impossible, if not impossible. So let's just not do it. It's too hard to do.
And, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, these like the space is like, as Jonas was saying in the beginning, it's still very nascent. We're still at the very, at the early stages. And quite frankly, in the beginning, it's always, it feels a bit uncertain and strange. And then trust doesn't come easily. And we just need to keep at it as the industry and as policymakers, like both public and private sectors, to kind of join efforts and make sure that we're exploiting the best possible outcome for everyone and building that trust. So yeah, we can't really put it, you know, exact prediction on when that will happen. But I think if we all together work on it and like we have human ingenuity in the mix, we'll be able to accomplish something within, you know, the next couple of years. Perhaps there will be more of these guardrails. There will be more clearly defined parameters within that layer two that I spoke about that will make it a bit easier for people to start adopting that. And then that way, we can build a trust over time. But how long that will take exactly, it's really hard to tell. We shall see. Maybe in our next podcast, there's more to report.
Yes, excellent, Sonja. We really enjoyed this conversation with you about agentic AI for multiple reasons. First, because it kicked off our thinking at BFRR on this very topic, so more content about agentic AI to come. Thank you also, Sonja, for sharing your knowledge in your recent paper, how agentic AI will reshape payments. And then, of course, for your takes here during our recording. And also thanks to the audience for listening to the podcast and for making it until the end of this very episode. If you enjoy the podcast, please recommend and rate us. That always helps us the most. Do connect with us on YouTube, LinkedIn, and our expert community on Telegram, both in German and English. Sonja, if that's not already the case, of course, you're invited to join our institutional DLT community on Telegram, where, for example, this episode will be shared. And to everyone, make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts and join us next week when we'll be exploring another critical development in the evolution of digital finance. Until then, this is Bitcoin, Fiat and Rock and Roll, bringing Europe's perspective on digital money and digital assets to the world.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Bye-bye.
The views expressed are solely the personal opinions of the hosts and are provided for informational purposes only. This podcast does not offer financial or investment advice. Always conduct your own research and make well-informed decisions before investing. Please be aware that the hosts and guests may hold cryptocurrencies or digital assets discussed in this episode.